Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Thursday. We are live at the Omni Nashville Hotel, just outside of Kitchen Notes in the main lobby, as we are every Thursday. Excited now for our next guest. Greg Wyshynski joins us. He's presented by Old National Bank. Get old. And, Greg, the draft begins tomorrow. We've already seen some player movement around the National Hockey League, but I have a feeling we're going to see even more, you know, in the coming days ahead with the draft going on. But how are you today?
I'm good. I listen, the more business that we can get done early so I can just, like, kick back with a margarita on July 2nd and forget about this whole thing, I'm all in favor of it.
I am right there with you. Let's start with some of the moves that have already happened. Evander Kane going to Vancouver. We kind of figured that after Edmonton lost back-to-back Stanley Cup finals to Florida that there would be some tweaking. Obviously, there's uncertainty when it comes to Connor McDavid. So what did you make of the Evander Kane move?
Well, from an Edmonton standpoint, it's great because I don't think that he was necessarily Mr. Popularity for that franchise. And
is he anywhere?
And it opens up. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. When I was writing about him, I'm like, oh, my God, I forgot about those two seasons in Buffalo where he got run out of town for off-ice stuff. I mean, it's just every single stop. The cap space is essential for Edmonton because they've got to give Draisaitl his big raise up to $14 million against the cap next season on that new contract. And then they have to sign Evan Bouchard, who's a restricted free agent, and it's going to cost them a pretty penny to sign him to a next deal. So, like, clearing out space was essential. Kane was an obvious choice. I'm just shocked. I don't quite understand the Vancouver part of this. Like, yeah. I understand that they're a team that's desperate for scoring on the wing. They want to add a little bit of the truculence and the physicality that left with JT Miller. They're hoping that the Vancouver native going back to Vancouver keeps him on his best behavior. But this guy's body's been breaking down in the last few seasons, and obviously we know about his reputation going into a team that, you know, fell apart last year because of locker room problems. So for what they got, I'm a little bit surprised they didn't ask for more from Edmonton to sweeten the pot.
I'll tell you, I'm a little, I guess, intrigued by what Utah, the Mammoth, are doing because, even though they inherited what was left of the Arizona Coyotes, they are an expansion team, and we saw their first year. Now they actually have a name. They're going to have a high draft pick, and now they've made a blockbuster trade. What do you make of the Mammoth?
I like that move for them last night for Paterka. I mean, there's a wide range of results for that kid's career. He's 23. You know, he could be someone who continues to be upwardly mobile and is maybe like a Jordan Kyrou type. I mean, if he improves his defense, maybe we're even talking about him in the Brandon Hagel category. Or, you know, he could end up being a guy like Jacob Verana, who had a couple of really good scoring seasons for the Capitals and then never was able to really recapture the magic. But it's a good gamble for them to take. They definitely needed scoring on the wing. They were 21st in goals per game last year. But a lot of people love the dunk on Buffalo, and rightfully so, because they're a terrible team. But I do think they came out pretty good here. The defenseman they pulled, Michael Kesselring, to me is the kind of defenseman that you really want on your team. He's a right-handed shot. He's going to play in their top four. He's physical. I've liked watching him. I've liked him when I've watched the Mammoth this season. And Josh Doan, you know, the son of Shane Doan, has some offensive upside at the very least. You're getting two NHL players for Paterka, who was clearly a guy that didn't want to be there anymore. But boy, like I said last night, you want to talk about a moment in which the Arizona Coyotes are completely dead and buried. It's Shane Doan's kid getting traded away from the franchise. Like, that is it. That's the final nail in the Coyotes' coffin when that happens.
Greg Wyshynski is with us. So I asked Barry Trotz on Tuesday when he did his availability, you know, you've laid out this plan, you're building for the future, but you're also kind of trying to win in the now. At some point, do you have to pick a lane and stay in it? And his answer was basically, the roster is going to dictate that, what I do. And he thinks that this roster, you know, there's no way they're the 30th, you know, team in the NHL. They just had a terrible year. So he wants to give them an opportunity to have a bounce back. But if they don't, then yeah, that's going to dictate kind of where he goes. I think that they need to find a Zegras type player that is young, hasn't quite proven what he has, maybe needs a change of address to get that true potential. Do you think that type of player is still out there for Nashville to potentially go after?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are definitely teams out there that are having the kinds of mental conundrums about what to do with their young players that they might not, that they like, but might not love. I mean, you think of Keandre Miller with the New York Rangers, for example. I mean, that's a guy that I think is a quality NHL player. They just don't know if they want to pay him the money he's looking for and extend him for as long as he's looking for. And there are other situations that are going to be like that around the league. I mean, look, it's the thing that teams should do. I mean, you know, it's a copycat league, and everybody's looking at Florida winning back-to-back cups and being like, what could we do that they've done? And the answer is simple, which is they were the team that aggressively traded their draft picks and their futures for a guy like Sam Bennett. People forget Bennett was like fourth overall in the draft in Calgary. He never really met the expectations that were placed on him. And so Calgary was like, we don't want to pay him a long-term deal, and we also don't want to lose him for nothing in the expansion draft, so we'll trade him. And so there are going to be opportunities like that. Sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. But for the most part, like, it's much better to do that than to try to like commit years and money to some guy that's, you know, turning 30 next year as an unrestricted free agent.
Greg, one of my all-time favorite draft stories in any professional league, it was in 1999. Mike Ditka with the Saints traded his entire draft for one player. Is there a GM in the NHL that's a maverick that would do it this year? I'm not saying to that extreme, but would package together a bunch of this draft class, send it out for one player in return. Is there one GM who would do that?
There's so many guys that are cowards that I don't know how many would actually do it. I do remember there being one GM. I can't remember who it was now that I believe talked about doing something crazy like that during McDavid's draft year of trying to pry him away from Edmonton by trading away their entire team. And I remember there was also a story way back in the day of Montreal trying to trade for Vinny LeCavalier from the Predators, and like the trade involved, you know, Carey Price, PK Subban, like it was a crazy amount of talent going the other way. I don't know who would be brave enough to do that. There are definitely folks that are maverick enough to do that, but again, it really depends on the player at the top of the draft. And in this draft, I mean, I think we could definitely put that thought aside because there's not a player that's worth that level of investment. There might not even be a player in this draft worth three NHL players, let alone like 10.
Oh, nice. All right, the Preds will probably take number 5. They have two more in the first round. With that second player in the bottom, the third player in the first round, the second player at that late part of the first round, is that somebody you take a flyer on? You already got your fifth pick. You got the one after him. That third pick in the first round, would you take a flyer on some young guy that maybe it's kind of a chance on him? Would you do that?
Well, you've hit on draft philosophy, right? Like your first, if you've got three picks, your first pick is always going to be probably an area of need. Like if you're between a center and a defenseman, and your defense is pretty stout within your prospect pipeline, you're going to go for the center. And obviously, I think we all expect that the Predators are going to go for a center at 5. And then if you have another pick, then you're probably taking best player available, maybe a player that that does fill another need in your lineup. And then as you get down in the first round, this is where you're taking your swing. You know, you're finding the odd named Latvian that people have forgotten about, and maybe he's going to go in the second round on most mock drafts, but you're taking him in the first round because you like his upside. So you're absolutely right. I mean, the lower you get in the first round, the more chances you're going to take. But you know, I'm intrigued to see what they do at 5. I think there's a kind of consensus on who the top 4 picks in this draft are going to be, which means that Nashville is kind of the pivot. And the name that I've focused on forever in this draft is James Hagans, a small size center, but a really good center from Boston College as a freshman. There's a lot of people that believe he's going to be the big dropper tomorrow, the guy that's going to plummet down the first round. If that's the case, I would be shocked if the Islanders don't find a way to trade up and bring home the Long Island native, especially because it's such a big day for them anyway with the first overall pick. But that's a player I think I wonder what the conversations are internally for Nashville right now, because he is a dynamic offensive player, but they may opt for someone with a little bit more size, like a Roger McQueen or a Jake O'Brien at that spot.
Barry Trotz did tell our afternoon show on Tuesday that you know, basically in a perfect world, he'd want to take a center. But he's, you know, he's going to certainly take the best player available. If, you know, Martone is the one that's there, who's a winger, I, you know, he's probably going to become a Nashville Predator. I think that's his mindset.
I think that is professional malfeasance.
That
we know
too.
What the center depth chart is for this team right now, and we know what the center depth chart is for the franchise right now. And there are a number of centers that are going to go in the top 10 that could be up in this league within like 2 years. Like, I just think you got to go in the middle if you're Nashville. But listen, I pretend to be a draft pundit for about 72 hours every year. You've caught me at a good time, and I'll say that I really do think that there are centers available that Nashville should consider before they go with Martone.
Well, I'll say this. He sat down in, with our afternoon show host, and Jared looks at him and goes, I got to tell you, I'm proud of you. And Barry's like, why? And he goes, because you spoke for 30 minutes and didn't say anything. you basically answered all these questions without answering anything, and he laughed. I mean, that's a GM.
Yeah, he's grown into the role. We've gone from Barry explaining explicitly what's wrong with his teams as a coach to Barry now being the most vague and political guy in the room, and that's the true gift of a general manager. Make us feel like you're telling us something, and then we look back at our notes and we're like, oh man, we've got nothing.
Well, my favorite was, and you probably experienced this, is David Poile would tell you something, but he would do it in a way that you wouldn't realize that he was telling you something. And then when he actually revealed it, he was like, "Well, I tried to tell you," and I mean that's how good he was. I'm like, there was one time, it was right after they re-signed Roman Josi. I ran into him in the media room, and I was like, you got any more surprises for us? And he's like, well, I don't know, maybe. There could be something coming up. And I thought he was joking, and 2 hours later they announced Austin Watson had re-signed. I was like, he's like, I tried to tell you.
I mean, listen, a good portion of your job as a sports writer is context clues.
Yes.
Like, you know, to go back to the Paterka trade we talked about off the top, I mean, Kevin Adams, the GM of the Buffalo Sabres, was asked, has he requested a trade? And he was doing his little tap dancing around the question. And then he said, you know, after the draft, I should be able to give you more clarity on that. And then you're like, oh, this cat's getting traded well before the draft then, isn't he? So, like, you just got to pick up on those things sometimes.
Greg, the Hockey Hall of Fame came out today. I'm reading your story you wrote on ESPN.com about that. You like who got selected?
Oh, I think it's an awesome class. I mean, I've been banging the drum on Alexander McGillney for a number of years. I think not only as a thrilling superstar player for the Sabres and the Canucks and the Devils, but also the Hockey Hall of Fame should tell the story of the game. And this is the first guy to defect from the Soviet Union to North America. He did it in a very, very, you know, it's like something out of a John le Carre novel. Like, it's just, it's spycraft the way it happened. And so like to be able to tell that story, to point to a plaque and tell your kid that story is why we have the Hockey Hall of Fame. So I thought that the three first-timers, Keith and Chara and Joe Thornton, were the correct picks. I wouldn't have made Carey Price or Ryan Getzlaff a first-ballot guy. And then we turn our attention to 2026. That's the story that I have on ESPN.com right now. I mean, Patrice Bergeron, slam dunk, first ballot. Then you have Price, you have Marlowe, you have Getzlaff, you have Tkachuk, Keith Tkachuk, Zetterberg. You got a bunch of guys that are still in the mix beyond Bergeron, who's in his first year. And I'm intrigued to see what they do next year. I think it'll end up being Bergeron, Price, and Getzlaff, but I'm intrigued to see what they end up doing with Patrick Marlowe. He's a bit of a compiler, but a lot of those ex-players on that selection committee do love somebody who had longevity, and nobody had more longevity than Marlowe did.
Greg, as we wrap this up, Nashville has four picks in the top 35. I think we all feel like they're going to stick and pick at five. The other three, the two at the end of the first round and then the third pick in the second round, I'm not so sure of, because I get the sense that if Barry can do something, that's what he's going to do. Do you think they pick at all four of those spots, or do you see Barry making some moves?
I could see him making some moves, but it could ultimately be just to like move up in the first round. I mean, that's yeah, sometimes why you move those picks. I mean, trading first round picks in the NHL is not as commonplace as it is in other sports. And you know, part of the reason is because first round picks are clearly more valuable. I mean, you look at the statistics of the guys that eventually made the league, the drop off after the first round is you know, like downhill skiing. Like it's crazy the difference. So that's one reason. But you know, the other reason is that sometimes the packages are just to move up to get somebody that you like in the draft. It'll be intriguing to see. I mean, if we're to believe Barry and he wants to give this roster another shot, that would tell you that they want to probably improve the roster. One way to do that is trading your picks. And then maybe, you know, and we've talked about this before, the three of us, like, maybe that also informs what ultimately happens with a guy like Jonathan Marchessault, who, yeah, you know, maybe people believe could use a fresh start. But if it's doubling down and just trying to make this thing work, then maybe he sticks around despite what other people think.
We will certainly see how it all goes. We have enjoyed this year. I know next week you'll probably be sipping a margarita somewhere because it'll be July 3rd. So I know we're going to take a little bit of a break, but thanks so much for doing this each week, and we'll definitely touch base this summer. If not to talk hockey, maybe a little wrestling.
Anytime. And again, like I don't like kissing behinds on the air, but you know, I enjoy doing this every week because I know the conversation will never be the same one that we had the previous week.
And that's, exactly. Listen, man, thanks.
As a guy who does his fair share of radio hits, let me tell you something right now. That is a gift. That is a gift to not have the same conversation twice in the span of a week. So I always appreciate talking to you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN senior NHL writer, joining us here on the program. And he is presented by Old National Bank. Get Old. Live from the Omni Nashville Hotel, 102.5 The Game.